This is Marlene with Miami Ghost Chronicles, and I want to welcome you to another episode of Stories of the Supernatural. Wherever you find us, whether it's a video or podcast on your favorite platform, please like and subscribe to us so that you can get notification of when a new show is released. You can also find us on major social media platforms. If you go to MiamiGhostChronicles.com, you can find links to the videos or MP3 files, which you can download and enjoy without commercial interruptions. If you're into classic horror, ghost, and adventure stories, I narrate Nightshade Diary, and you can find links at NightshadeDiary.com. If scary stories are your bag, and listening to encounters with cryptids, ghosts, dogmen, and other weird creatures sends a shiver up your spine, then go to SupernaturalStorytime.com for links to our weekly podcasts. Noteworthy news about the paranormal world, true crime, conspiracy stories, and anything that is just plain weird can be found at eerie.news or visit the Stranger Than Fiction Stories tab at MiamiGhostChronicles.com. Please subscribe to my newsletter on Substack. Just go to mppelliser.com for a link. I want to thank you for being part of my audience, and I think you are all wonderful. Hi, how's everybody doing? Good? I'm good. And briefly, I wanted to bring up, because I forget about this myself. You know that traditionally, Christmas time, around this was the season where ghost stories, everybody thinks of, as a matter of fact, you see that trend, you know, around Halloween is when everybody digs up ghost stories, or you see the magazines and everybody run all these stories about haunted places. And traditionally before, you know, once upon a time, ghost stories were more of a wintertime Christmas kind of thing where, you know, it's cold outside and people are huddled around. And, you know, we're talking here, you know, Victorian times where people would gather around. And as a matter of fact, a lot of the, what do you call it? The formula that a lot of the writers had was they would sometimes set the setting, like that character was in a setting with a group of people and they would tell the story. Sometimes the story had happened to them, or sometimes they retold a story of someone they knew, of course, and it was usually a ghost story, which, by the way, was great. But yeah, I want to remind everybody that really traditionally now is really the time that the ghost stories were told and retold. And, you know, the traditional, you know, the white lady on the stairs, whatever, or, you know, or the white lady of the castle or whatever. And then you had other ones of just, you know. Let me tell you something. Some of my favorite ones are what they call the time of the Raj, which is when the Brits were in India, and of course, you know, they had, you know, the British citizens that lived there, and they had a lifestyle, of course, and they had like, of course, Rudyard Kipling wrote a bunch of great stories in that setting, but there's a bunch of other stories. That's one of my favorite settings for the ghost stories of that time. And as a matter of fact, they had several women authors, which would just write with their initials, and I'm drawing a blank right now, which wrote some fantastic stories, which were, what's the word I'm looking for? They were ghost stories, but they also had an exotic flavor to them because of the setting, you know, things of that nature. And invariably, a lot of these stories was that the English man, woman, whatever, was they, in other words, they kind of tripped over sometimes the traditions or things that they shouldn't do, that all of a sudden they find out about the supernatural while they're living there in India. It's very interesting. If anybody ever has a chance to look up any of the ghost stories from the Raj from that time period, you should. One of my favorites is one that's called To Let, T-O-L-E-T, which is the equivalent of to rent. If you ever find that story, it's very good. Okay, let's get on to the good part. The good part is who is our guest tonight at Stories of the Supernatural, and this is the first time that he's here. His name is Joshua Chairs, and he is the director founder of Phantom Detectives, LLC. He's a paranormal investigator, writer, researcher, musician, and publicist. He got interested in the supernatural at an early age while watching Unsolved Mysteries with Robert Stack. His interest in the supernatural peaked in 2002, when he had the opportunity to investigate the General Wayne Inn in Marion Station, Pennsylvania. In 2014, Joshua co-founded the Summerwind Restoration Society, along with Wisconsin paranormal investigator Greg Nehring. Their goal is to use the original blueprints of Summerwind Mansion to restore, rebuild, and relaunch Summerwind Mansion as a museum. With its haunted history, Summerwind is known to be one of the most haunted locations in Wisconsin. In August of 2020, he founded Phantom Detectives LLC to help people who are going through paranormal experiences. Using the Paranormal Research Society blueprint, Chairs is hoping to build a team of renowned paranormal investigators and is dedicated to helping people that are going through these experiences. He has investigated the Sanderson Museum, Selma Mansion, Mill of Anselma, White Chimneys, the General Wayne Inn, Fort Mifflin, Pennhurst, Smyrna Museum in DePaoli Battlefield, Gettysburg, Chad's Ford Historical Society, and many other locations. On May 21st, 2021, Joshua's Future LLC company purchased the rights to the late Art Bell's former affiliate director's news program, Dark Matter News. Mr. Chairs was also the former producer of Dr. J Radio Live and Amy on the Radio. Help me welcome him. How are you doing today, Joshua?
I'm wonderful. How about yourself today?
Good. Wow, you've been busy the last few years, huh?
Oh, absolutely. With everything that's been going on, over the last couple of years since I founded Phantom Detectives and the way that we're trying to revolutionize paranormal investigating in Pennsylvania, we've been getting more and more requests for investigations, caseloads, and, you know, everything from, you know, that you had just mentioned to acquiring Dark Matter News, you know, to also having to deal with more and more events, setting up vendor tables at places. We've been nonstop busy and we're running full steam into 2024 to start thinking about, like, you know, the next phase that we're doing, which is kind of be setting up a paranormal tours division. It's something I feel very passionate about, is to find haunted locations in our area and have people come investigate with us. So that's something I'm planning on kind of slowly rolling out as we get closer to that date.
Right. Like, it's like a way of legend tripping that's a little bit safer. The reason why I say this is that sometimes people, I've heard of, you know, people going legend tripping on their own sometimes to supposed locations, and they either end up trespassing, they find squatters, or they fall through the floor, something like that. Yeah. So it's good to have a place that you could go to where it's safe. I hate to say it's safe. You know,
exactly.
And let me ask you, you said you were looked at unsolved mysteries when you were a kid. Did you ever have any paranormal experience when you were younger?
I would say most of the time, I just started, like, in early, much like any kid diving into the paranormal. Of course, I started watching In Search of Leonard Nimoy and Unsolved Mysteries of Robert Speck. And what really piqued my interest was there was this episode, of course, called the General Wayne Inn, which is a place I would later investigate. This is called the Inn of the 17 Ghosts. It was founded by a major, it was called the Wayside Inn in 1704. And during the American Revolution, it actually served as, like, Hessian soldiers used to come in and out of the place. Because it was actually using Colonel Rawls' encampment. So he would have them go there. And what's pretty amazing is famous dignitaries that would pass through there included Ben Franklin, Marquis de Lafayette, years later, Edgar Allan Poe. So then in 1792, Major General Anthony Wayne, who was, the name was changed to him because he actually would come in the General Wayne Inn a lot. He actually ran the Pennsylvania Continental Army for General Washington during the American Revolution. So they renamed it the General Wayne Inn. And then, of course, over the years, people have reported seeing Hessian soldiers in the basement. People have reported, seeing, like, different full body, partial body apparitions. And then, of course, but people would say when they watched the Unsolved Mysteries episode with Robert Stack, that there would be, like, the supposedly the patrons in the bar would be watching, and all of a sudden the clock would be turning clockwise on the TV.
Oh my gosh.
Counterclockwise.
That definitely has to have a lot of history. God knows what happened. You know, what's that saying, if walls could speak?
Yes, absolutely. And then as we got in the 90s, I started, much like any kid, picking up every book I could by Dr. Hans Holzer, who was America's first Ghost Hunter. He kind of pioneered it all,
Yes.
you know, for people like us. And then, of course, his legendary investigations with his transmedium Sybil Leak and Ethel Myers.
Sybil,
And then, of
yes.
course, you know, his, of course, his investigations, of course, inspired Ghostbusters, the movies, you know, and the series that we
Yes.
all know today. And then, of course, in the 90s, I would one time just flip in the AM dial and I started hearing this voice. I was absolutely amazed. And he said Dreamland with Art Bell. And I just started
Art
listening to
Bell,
Art.
my
Yeah.
favorite. I love Art Bell.
And you know, later on, years later, I would end up having to work with his staff members, which was a pretty memorable experience, booking their guests and setting up all their the all their talking points and you know sound checking the people. So it's pretty funny how that ended up happening years later. And then of course,
Isn't
in 2002, I really didn't have any, and you know, I think I had one UFO experience as a kid, you know, a research I've ever seen, like lights in the sky.
right?
But I don't think it really didn't happen for me until like when I was 18, when I was down in the basement of the General Wayne Inn. You know, my early mentor in the field, her name was the late Michaeline Baer. She passed away back in the early 2000s. She had a Philadelphia team at the time. So I went down to the basement of the General Wayne Inn. And down there, I started really getting cold chills. And I took three consecutive photos, much like when you're. And back then, let me say, ghost hunting equipment wasn't like it was today, you know, with all these different like REM pods and these,
No, there wasn't. There wasn't. Yeah, it was.
you might have just had like an EMF meter, maybe a voice recorder, and maybe you had a digital
Our
camera.
body, believe it or not, our
Yeah.
bodies, like you said, you
Right.
felt that chill. Your body is the instrument sometimes when you were
Exactly.
back in those times.
Exactly. And I what's pretty amazing was I took one of the three consecutive photos. That was like the old saying, let's take a digital camera, take three photos and see what pops up on the second and the third one. And on the third one of my three photos I took in this one spot where people reported seeing this Hessian soldier, I started picking up these really weird green and yellow streaks of light. I've never seen anything like it. And I took it back to different, you know, film companies during that time because I was a senior in high school. It was like one of my
Okay.
first, you know, dives into the paranormal. And people went back and said, hey, we have no reason why, we can't explain why this is here. So it matches the color patterns, match the witness scene people of a Hessian soldier. So, and supposedly this Hessian soldier's name was Wilhelm. He died sometime during when Washington, you know, you've seen the famous painting of George Washington crossing the Delaware in like
Yes.
1776. So to me, like it matches the witnesses, people supposedly saying this Hessian soldier is still trapped there years later. And of course, unfortunately, there was a the Jewish synagogue bought it in 2004. So 2 years later, it was converted to like a Jewish synagogue by Shabbat of the Main Line. So they purchased it, and then.
That's a weird change.
Yeah. So
Okay.
some rabbis that purchased it, and then all of a sudden,
Okay.
and then of course they report they don't see, oh, we don't see any ghosts. Are they just saying that to like maybe kind of not play on it? Or they did renovate the place. So you wonder if the activity actually increased, or they're just kind of brushing under the rug so nobody knows.
Right,
You
yeah, it's
know.
like, yeah, it's like, all right, we ignore it, it'll go away.
Exactly. And then of course, 2004, I graduated, I went to college, got Westchester University. I started going there. Graduated in 08. And then of course all these shows started popping out on TV. You know, you started seeing like Ghost Hunters, you know, Jason and Grant, the plumbers from Roto-Rooter, who are a
Right,
longtime
yeah, they
friends
were
of
like the
mine.
first ones that did that formula of the ghost hunting. Yeah.
Yeah, Jason and Grant, and then but then you started seeing then 2007, Ryan Buell comes out with Paranormal State. I know
Yes.
I actually got one of their former members working with me, Holly Faust. She's actually an expert on occult studies and occult symbols and religious studies, spirituality. Holly, of course, worked with Ryan Buell, and she's working with us now. And then, of course, Ghost Adventures started coming out. I know Jeff Bellinger very well, longtime friend. He's been the writer and researcher from Ghost Adventures
Yes.
since its inception. And then, so all these shows started coming out. I really started loving how they would do it. Like they would go to a haunted location. They would set up equipment in different parts of the location, and then they would, you know, review it and see what pops up to share with the client. And I always found that interesting because to me, history is like a time capsule. We're always trying to understand why history is like, why what's happening at some of these locations. Did something tragic happen on why spirits are still haunting there? Or did something happen where they started doing some kind of, you know, super, you know, are they just making stuff up just to attract attention to a place? So I always loved like the backstory and checking the property records and seeing
Yeah,
exactly.
sometimes you'd be surprised what you find. It's and it's not
Absolutely.
sometimes doesn't line up with, yeah, it's like, wow. Sometimes it's worse than what you think when you do the research on it.
Exactly. And that's a lot of times, that's what we do with our audio interviews. We just start drawing out the Rick interviews the client, and then the client gives the history. So we don't have to really even check the, because most of the location owners have usually have all the history right in front of them. So we have all that. So it wasn't until 2014, then 6 years later, I created the Summerwind Restoration Society. And I would love to tell you a little bit about Summerwind and its history. So Summerwind is this old ruined mansion on the shores of West Bay Lake, Wisconsin. It was built in 1914 by a guy named John Frank. Mr. Frank, of course, was moving from Akron, Ohio. So he built this place called West Bay Lake Fishing Lodge. You could stay there for $4.99 a night on the shores of West Bay Lake. And then what's pretty cool about this place, it was in the upper UP of Wisconsin, like the upper third, the northern third. And then what's amazing was during this time, then Mr. Frank sold the property to a guy named Robert Patterson Lamont. Mr. Lamont, of course, was actually he had the place reconverted, so they renamed it from West Bay Lake Fishing Lodge to Lilac Hills. And then after the mansion got converted, a lot of people he started saying, hey, and the he actually employed Chicago architects Thomas Tamaj and Vernon Watson to reconvert this old mansion. So after he reconverted, the ghost stories really started increasing from Summerwind. In the 1920s, it's rumored that U.S. presidents Warren G. Harding and Calvin Coolidge actually stayed at the place because they were friends of Mr. Lamont's. And of course, Mr. Lamont ended up years later being a U.S. Secretary of Commerce under President Herbert Hoover.
There you go.
What a coincidence that is! And then, so the servants started going into telling Mr. Lamont, hey, that there's ghost stories and there's different places out there, and of course Mr. Lamont said, hey, there's no such thing as ghosts. And then until he had his own experience himself one night, while this was actually on season one, episode two of A Haunting. And then
Yes, I,
basically,
that Summerwind name, it rings a bell, but it's as you're telling the story, but keep going. It's very interesting.
sure. So Mr. Lamont, of course, he was at dessert. Here's one of my favorite ghost stories from Summerwind. So he actually ended up, him and his wife were sitting eating dessert one night in the kitchen area. And what happened was pretty wild. There's actually, according to the story of Summerwind, there's this basement door flew open and revealing a ghostly form of a man. So Mr. Lamont fired two shots. He grabbed his black powder fister, pow, pow, fired two shots, and the bullets always missed the ghost. And the basement door completely flew closed, and he left the property never to return. And then it wasn't until,
Like that.
and so he ended up dying in 1948. So the property then went to, in the episode of A Haunting, her name was Miss Murray, but her real name was Miss Kiefer. So Lillian Kiefer bought the place after Mr. Lamont died. And over the next 20 years, she would lease out the property to different people to, to rent, and then they would give it back to her. And then the Henshaw family moved in. This is where the Summerwind story really picks up. So the Henshaw family moved in the summer of 1969. They absolutely had to have the place. They wanted it to be able to have an ultimate project as a fixer-upper. They saw great potential in it. So when they first started moving in, Mr. and Miss Henshaw, of course, Miss Henshaw had three kids of her own, and then Mr. Henshaw had three kids of her of his own. It was kind of like step by step, or step kids and
That was
step,
a must have been a very calm household, though.
absolutely. And then what was wild was Mr. Lamont, supposedly with the ghost stories, the doors or the windows would fly open on themselves, so they had to pretty much knock the they had to nail the windows shut. And then after the windows were nailed shut, they would employ contractors to start thinking about renovating the place. And what was supposedly wild was during the contracting, the tools would disappear and then reappear, like especially like they would have like a heater. This was one of the first properties to have like steam heat and electricity back in the 20s. So for this old place to have that, they would be start working on pumps and stuff, and they would just break down and then start again. And then according to where things really got bad at Summerwind is when, of course, Arnold Henshaw, of course, one day started was trying to go outside. There's a legend of a report of a ghost story of his car catching on fire. So once his car caught on fire,
That's pretty radical. It's like
So once the car caught on fire, supposedly things started taking a turn for worse. He actually, one of my favorite ghost stories was this was one that'll gore your hair from Summerwind. I know the family personally. And that lived there in the 70s. And suppose it's got when you funny thing is when you look outside the property, it looks like kind of like a little bit like Amityville with the one of the corners of the house. So, And what's wild was his 10-year-old daughter April, who I know, of course, Ginger passed away in 2013. And so basically, she actually, April told me as a kid, she crawled in this crawl space that was in the back of this room. And supposedly, Mr. Henshaw shined a flashlight in there. Of course, April had found this skeleton with black hair.
Holy crap.
So basically, when that happened, according to her, like everything, they started taking a turn for the worse.
But like a
Mr.
human
Le
skeleton.
Exactly, with black hair. So according to that, then like what happened was Mr. Henshaw, his real name was Jim Hill. Of course, they changed the name Henshaw, but a stage name to protect the identity of the people involved. So Mr. Henshaw actually started playing the organ to all hours of the night. It was like a Wurlitzer or some kind of organ was actually at Summerwind back in the 70s. And then he started playing the organ every hour. And the family was so terrified they had to report staying in one room. And then what happened was Ginger called her dad and said, "Hey, I got to get out of here. I'm too terrified to live in this place." So basically, he, of course, then she tried attempting suicide, from what I hear, according to reports. And then Mr. Henshaw ended up having a mental breakdown, committed himself to a mental institution up in Canada. He was never seen again. And then, of course, here's where the ghost story starts escalating, because Ginger's father, his name was Raymond von Bober. He was a popcorn vendor from Chicago. He starts saying, "Hey, I want to make a go of this place." So he went back to Miss Kiefer and said, "Hey, can I buy it or can I lease it out?" And she said, "Yes." So they went ahead and eventually were planning on renting it to buy it. And then what happened was they had similar problems that the Henshaws have. They went ahead and had tools that would disappear. They would have like they would try painting rooms, and all of a sudden they would try priming it, and all of a sudden the colors would change. And then, of course, it was rumored that they would take measurements. They had the original blueprints with them. And then, of course, the blueprints would change shape. So when Summerwind was known to change shape, all that was going on. And then, of course, of course, Raymond von Bober Jr., who I actually know, he's actually still alive. His dad died in 2005, right after the haunting episode aired on Discovery Plus. So he went ahead and actually, suppose he was going up into one of the rooms and upstairs, and then he started going. Then he felt, and he saw, like, and then he heard a noise downstairs in the basement area. And then when he started touching the bullet, he saw the bullet holes. He touched the bullet holes. He started seeing a vision of Mr. Lamont. You know how when you touch something, a psychometry, like with a medium, when they touch an object, they see past, like visions of what happened during that time. And so when he touched the bullet holes, he started seeing visions of the Mr. Lamont firing his gun and then never returning to the mansion. So what was wild was the von Bobers never stayed inside the house. They always had a trailer outside the house.
That's
So
very telling.
they never lived inside the house. And then, of course, Mr. Von Bober, they basically decided after years, they decided to abandon Summerwind around somewhere around the late 70s. And of course, von Bober Sr. Wrote a book called The Carver Effect, a paranormal experience. Supposedly they were alleging in the book. Book is very hard to find, but if you can get a copy of it, it's really good.
What's it? What's the title on it?
The Carver Effect, a
The
paranormal
Carver Effect.
experience.
Okay.
And according to the what they claim is supposedly this 18th century English explorer by the name of Jonathan Carver, who supposedly was trying to get a northern third of Wisconsin, was looking for this land grant inside Summerwind. Now, it's never been found, never been seen. But so what was happened was this Kiefer, she died around 85, 86. So what happened was my friend Craig Nearing knows the current owner's property. They bought the place around 86 because their names are Harold and Babs Tracy. So Harold and Babs Tracy bought it in 1986 for a couple from La Crosse, Wisconsin. So they went ahead and say, "Hey, maybe we can make a go of the place again." So when they purchased it, Mr. Tracy bought the property as a wedding anniversary present to Miss Tracy. So she went ahead, they went ahead and made an offer, bought it, and then unfortunately, they actually reported one of my other favorite ghost stories from their ownership of Summerwind was supposedly they would walk up to the place one night around 86, 87 after they bought it. And according to what they had told my friend Craig, who runs the Fox Valley Ghost Hunters up there, that supposedly the mansion was actually almost like breathing, like inhaling, like taking a life of its own. So what happened was, unfortunately, a year later on Father's Day of 1988. So now we're going to go into what happened. So what happened in Father's Day of 1988 was the place, lightning and fire struck down Summerwind and basically burnt all the buildings on the property down. So all that remains today are the two tall chimneys, the foundation, and the steps. The place completely was razed and burnt. And what was wild was About 2017, a guy who basically his name was Jim Lechner, and former neighbor who lived next door at Summerwind in the early late 80s, early 90s, had supposedly told my friend Craig that supposedly the township was responsible for burning the property because they were tired of people trespassing on the
I've
property.
heard
Because,
of stuff like that, believe it or not, in other haunted sites. I've heard of that.
yeah, like where people would try to legend trip and try to get a paranormal experience. And of course, people were partying up in Wisconsin, so they would, you
And they're
know.
like, man, we're tired of this.
Yeah, so they decided to take it upon themselves. And what's wild was supposedly a fire marshal, I can't remember his name now, supposedly had told Jim Lechter, hey, we're going to be on site. Don't worry, there's going to be there. Supposedly they took like bales of hay and they just pretty much, and you can look this up in the Milwaukee Sentinel, November
Okay.
2017. Supposedly they just raised the place and just leveled, got all the bales of hay and just leveled it. And, basically that's what burned it down. So this is where I enter the picture. So 2014 rolls around. I watched a haunting episode, and all of a sudden, I went to summerwindmansion.com, which was still, online at that time, and it said blueprints for sale. So I went ahead and, looked up the blueprints, and I emailed the seller. They turned out to be Raymond von Boger Jr., who is
Okay.
Ginger's brother. And what's wild was after doing that, I purchased the original blueprints and the original engineering directions I still have to this day, and after purchasing, I seeked out a connection to the property, and I came across Craig Nering from the Fox Valley
Okay.
Ghost Hunters. They do paranormal tours up at the property. I said, "Hey, I know the owners. Call me." And then one day we started talking, and what we ended up doing was creating the Summerwind Restoration Society in 2014 to rebuild. Because we said, "Hey, why don't we start thinking about rebuilding the place? This could be great
Okay.
potential for somebody." So I went ahead, even wanted to copy the blueprints, and we started working on all the publicity for it. And now we're at a point where even though the place no longer physically exists, there's still a lot of things going on the property today. According to Craig, there's like they would investigate down there, and they would the rocks would come they would come up flying out of the foundation. They reported like in 2017 for something called World's Largest Ghost Hunt, which is huge live stream event
Okay.
from paranormal teams all the world, something called a floating lady in the stairs area of the mansion. So pretty wild that it's still
Let me
active
ask you
today.
something, just out of curiosity, because I know that a lot of that area, because a lot of stuff went on during Prohibition, especially
Yes.
on
Yeah.
houses that were like
Oh,
stuff
yeah.
that you never, deaths that, things that were never made it to papers, and a
Yeah,
lot
yeah.
of, and I if they were around in the 1920s, especially on that lake, there's
Yes.
a very good chance something was going on there as far as bootlegging.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And not to mention, according to the rumor of two U.S. presidents staying there sometime in the
Yes.
1920s, and then the
Yeah.
service telling them the house was haunted, there was a floating lady in the kitchen area. That's definitely something's going on there, and even now, 100 years later. So it seems to me that place is still very active to this day. So that's pretty wild. So that place was amazing. And then what I did was 2019. I started, I was in another team at that time, but I wasn't happy how it was progressing. So I went ahead and said, "Hey, I'm going to start my own team." So August 2020 rolls around, and I wanted to, because I really started doing some of my own investigation, I wanted to start my own team. So
Okay.
I created business cards, I created social media pages, I had a website built from the ground up, and I brought my former team member over from my old team. She has since left the team because she started her career about 2 years ago. But in the early days, she was great to really help get started. And then what I started doing was started like recruiting people to really fit what I'm looking for with my vision of building this team. So
Okay.
I think I was watching one of my, I saw this old 1950s comic called Phantom Detect the Phantom Detective, which is an old comic back in the. And I said, you know what? This is a really cool name for a paranormal team. No one's
Yes,
ever
yeah.
used the name Phantom Detective. So I said, hey, why don't we go ahead and use that name, and then
Sure.
just started doing investigations under the old banner. So, which is really cool, is before we did our first investigation, we had the opportunity to train with Brian J. Cano, and of course, Brian J.
Yes.
Cano was on the show The Haunted Collector with John Zaffis.
Yes.
He was like the tech manager on that show, so he was in Selma Mansion in October 2020. So he showed us just the basic stuff. Like I had already had a general understanding how to do some of it, like how to do EMF meters, how to use dowsing rods, how to use the SLS camera, how to use voice recorders, and just like how to use the equipment and your senses to conduct investigations. And then I took all that knowledge I learned from Brian, and then in December 2020, we did our first investigation at the Sanderson Museum in Chatsford, Pennsylvania. And then, of course, I had a website built from the ground up, which was awesome. We had a team from India build it, and they did a fabulous job completely just fixing it up. And then after we did it, we went ahead and started doing investigations. So the Sanderson Museum is a really neat place in history in Chatsford, because it was this old museum that dates back to the 1960s, and a lot of historical. Mr. Sanderson was a musician. He was a poet. He used to host square dances in Chatsford. And if you go inside the museum, you'll see an actual bandage that was from President Abraham Lincoln that is still on display inside there, and a purse from the Jenny Wade House. Of course, Jenny Wade was killed in Gettysburg in 1863.
Yes,
So
yes.
the first time
And
we
she was
did the
the only
investigation.
civilian casualty over there in Gettysburg. Yeah.
Yep. And what was wild was that supposedly that we did our first investigation. There's in the violin room with the Sanderson Museum, there is like you can you know of course Mr. Sanderson's personal violin collection is still there inside the museum. So basically we went ahead and set up equipment in that area, and our former team member, we had a DVR, you know, one of those NVR security camera home security systems that we use. And
Okay.
then of course she our battery started being drained off the EMF meters.
There
And
you go.
then what was wild, not only did the battery start draining off our EMF meters, but also we also had you know the security camera was going off like crazy, like something was there, and we weren't in the room, mind you. And then of course I asked my team, I said, hey, quickly grab your camera, take some pictures. And you can see this really huge colored orb, and it didn't look anything like, you know, she I said, take the picture. And she saw, and she took a picture right in that room. And on the third picture of the set that she took, you could see this really huge colored two colored orbs like back to back. I have no reasonable
You know
explanation why
what?
that.
In a museums that get so many items that
Right.
sometimes you really don't know what comes with them.
Exactly. And that's what's wild is sometimes with these museums is that they end up having all kinds of history. And I absolutely love museums because history to me, like it's like it speaks. It's all about like the history and the with these locations, because there's so much going on at these old locations too. So one of my favorite is when we rolled into our second case. And this is like when I actually asked Mark Anthony, he's actually called the
Psychic
Mark
lawyer?
Anthony Psychic Glow. You ever hear of him?
Of course, I've interviewed him.
Awesome. Very cool.
Yes.
And he
Yes.
is one of my favorite people. Mark is actually you know, really cool. He's actually the author of three books. He's a fourth generation medium, Arthur Findlay College Physical Science in England. He also you know, has actually written, you know, also appeared regularly on Gaia TV and Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie. He joined our team. He kind of working with us remotely, but he's gonna be joining us for investigation. So he joined the team. And then we booked a place at called the Mill of Anselma in Chester Springs, Pennsylvania. So the Mill of Anselma, we did our second investigation. Our former team, of course, she was a volunteer there, so she was able to help us book that. And what was wild was you can see one of the best pieces, a couple of best pieces of evidence that we've ever captured in an investigation. So mind you, the Mill of Anselma dates back to 1747. It's the continuous oldest operating mill in the United
Okay.
States. And what's
Wow.
really neat about this old place is it's called the Lightfoot Mill, created by a guy named Charles Lightfoot in 1747. And according to the reports, you know, actually today, it'll like the mill is still operating today in since the 1700s nonstop. It's still going on today. And what's amazing is there was, of course, it's supposed to be going like cornmeal, wheat, flour. I mean, all these different things are you know, grinded up in this old mill. And what's pretty amazing was there was a famous poet that actually once lived there, and her name was Sarah Oberheiser. Sometime in the 19 early 1900s, late 1800s, lived there. And then, of course, she had an ownership of a while. And then, of course, it went to another. After she died, it went to a guy named Mr. Collins, who was like the miller there up until the 1980s before he passed away. So
Right.
we did an investigation there one night back in January of 2021. So, mind you, there was no one on the property that night, so it was just us, me and my former team member. So we went ahead and set up a camera on this door. We had one of our home security system cameras that we set up on this door. And mind you, me and my former team member were the only one on the property that night. So we went ahead and put the camera on the door, and there was no wind, there was no rain, it was not snowing. It was just all us on the property. This door flew open by itself. And mind you, it has a timing latch. It's one of those old-fashioned, you have to physically lift it up like this. And that thing was bolted. That thing was bolted shut, and it just flew open. I have no reasonable explanation of why it happened, but it's one of the best pieces of evidence that we've ever captured. And then, hours later, we were investigating the third floor. This rope, actually, you can see it on one of the stock videos that we have, which I can always send your listeners. It started moving by itself like this, just kind of swinging back and forth. And mind you, that we were not on the floor at that time. And then, of course, during EVP session, we like to call it phantom time, where we let the phantoms come talk to us on our voice recorders, and we actually asked a question. You can hear the word go on the voice recorder, and mind you, it wasn't my former team member and it wasn't me. So for that EVP to pop up was pretty wild. So that was pretty amazing. And then of course we started picking up several thermal imaging images. The thermal camera is a really cool piece of equipment, because what it does is it utilizes hot and cold signatures. Like, auto mechanics use it to like figure out like where on a particular auto part, if there's something wrong or a problem with some kind of maybe try to figure out where something's maybe a piece of an engine's hot or overheating, or if it's cold. You can look for auto mechanics use them. Of course, people helicopters also use them, thermal imaging, for looking for missing people in the wilderness. For example, someone's like a park ranger goes missing in some wilderness, they can locate the heat source inside the woods and fly their chopper over. You can see like the cold spots, which are blue, and of course the orange or red. So we actually started getting thermal images from the middle of Anselmo. So pretty amazing. And
let me ask you something: was the thermal signature colder or body?
Yes, so
body?
We were colder, right? Yep. So we were right by the Mr. Collins's, like, his office is still there at the old Mill of Anselmo today. No one, of course, uses it, but which is wild. Right by where his old office would be, actually picked up, you can start seeing a silhouette of a apparition right near his old office. And what's amazing was REM pod started going beep, 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 like that. They were going off, and we weren't even anywhere near that area. So this, that was pretty wild. Our second case, we got double the activity that we did in the first case. And then was wild was several months later, we actually went and I decided we needed to add more members to the team. So what I did is I went into the UFO world, because I love UFOs myself and my passion of flying objects. So I went ahead and invited someone named Mr. Rick Warner. Rick actually comes from the UFO world. He was certified by MUFON. And what's wild was when I first reached out to him, I actually thought he'd be a great fit, because he's actually had skills in like interviewing people and witnesses. He brings some serious academia to our team. So when I brought Rick in, he actually has a lot of skills of like field surveying, and he knows all the nuts and bolts of from the UFO world. So he brought his skills in from MUFON to our talent pool, which added he's a former certified UFO field investigator, and he's also the U.S. ambassador to the Italian UFO Federation, FUI. So he came in and really helped us. He started filming our investigations. He was actually able to start interviewing our clients. So he made his debut investigation at the Betsy Ross House. And the Betsy Ross House is an amazing historical place in Philadelphia. As you know, Philadelphia was like the cultural center of the world.
Yes, of
it
course.
It was intellectual capital of the world back in the 1700s, early 1800s. So the Betsy Ross House. And of course, in 1776, Betsy, of course, actually sewn our first flag in America. The first flag in American history was actually sewed at the Betsy Ross House. So, and there's a lot of ghost stories that people see in Betsy, different parts of the house. And mind you, we booked an investigation there in April 2021 with Historic Philadelphia, Heather Kincaid, who actually we reached out to her and we booked it. So we went and did an investigation there. So mind you, we only had like 3 hours. So we had to really kind of do as much
as we could. Wow, 3 hours is nothing for paranormal investigations.
Exactly. So we had to kind of rush. But what was amazing was in the basement area. So Rick and our former team member at that time, who has since left, she actually so they I asked them, hey, could you guys start doing like EVPs down in the basement area, see what you capture and see. And what was wild was Rick's voice recorder, he started picking up these growls, like you can hear him on our website, phantomdetectives.org.
Oh, there we go. Where was it? In the basement?
Yep, the basement of the
And the reason why I'm saying this, I've been doing paranormal investigations since the 90s. And I tell everybody, I did it when you had to pay to develop film. That's way, you know, back. I don't know why, whenever you get some type of anomaly in the cellar, in the basement, like in the earth, it's usually weird, like that growly stuff. So that's why I said the basement is like, never fails. But anyway, keep going.
Sure. So, and what was wild was I was up in another room doing like up in the, there's actually two rooms, of course. Betsy's room is up on the third floor of the Betsy Rawls house. And I was up there by myself. And I asked a question like, hey, is there anybody here with me? And I got a response back on the voice recorder after doing playback and bring up on Audacity. It said, I've been here too. So for that to happen and those growls, and when I showed the evidence,
that growl is like, oh man.
And of course,
growls, that's like, that's not Betsy. How's that?
Exactly. And what's wild was I was actually in Betsy's room. So I went ahead and took the thermal imaging camera, just point and click, one of those FLIR thermal imaging cameras. They work absolutely great because you can get them in and out of places. Because mind you, there's a big barrier, like, you know, big plexiglass. So I had to, you know, pretty much press the, you know, the thermal camera against the plexiglass. But in the image that I was able to capture, mind you, there was no reflective surfaces on this plexiglass. I actually captured what appeared to be Betsy's spirit. You could see it right next to her bed. And mind you, there was nobody else there. There was nobody could have been my reflection because it wasn't my shape. And there was nobody else with me during that time. This was like in the early evening one night around like 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock. So for that to happen, I have no reasonable explanation of why it happened. And then of course, you know, Rick,
you let
know,
me ask you, have they been able to keep any of the original furnishings from back
then?
Oh, yeah.
I think, like, for example, they have like, you know, I think they have one of the original replica flags. It's not exactly the original flag. I think the original flag, I think it's like still like around, but I think it's like in some museum. It has to be stored in some kind of like.
Sure. Yeah, I was going to say probably so it won't deteriorate. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Just much like the Declaration of Independence that was, of course, signed in basically 1776 at Independence Hall. I think that it's still around, but you can see it was actually back then, of course, they used like sheepskin, which is like vellum, to do a lot of their, you know, early signings. But unfortunately today, the original Declaration has been pressed so many times over the years, you know, from plates.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, unfortunately, you know, so I want to go back and show the evidence that we captured to historic Philadelphia. And of course, they downplay it like, oh, well, no one's ever heard that down there. But of course, people that had visited the basement would otherwise say that, yes, there is definitely paranormal activity going on. And my assumption is I checked the history of the Betsy Rawls house and went back into different property records. And what I think happened was for those growls to happen, somebody visiting the house might have like, did some kind of religious ritual in the basement area.
Absolutely,
maybe like,
yeah. Yes. Let me ask you, through the years, because I know a lot of times these historical homes, did it change hands or did they, from the beginning, did they try to maintain it as the Betsy Roth house or what happened?
Yeah. I think what happened was like sometime in maybe the 1800s or 1900s, of course there was a speakeasy for a while too after Betsy
there
died.
There you go. God. There you go.
So there might have been like some kind of, since there was a tavern there at some point in the 1800s, someone might have brought a Ouija board or something, conjured something up from somewhere.
Oh, you know, there's a body buried down there. You know, things like that happen. Yeah, you never know. It's like that.
And pretty wild is I think Betsy's either second or third husband, she's actually still buried on the property. Like you can see her grave is right outside the house. It's actually like, you know, right before you walk in, there's like right underneath a tree, you can see her, you know, her grave is still there with her husband. So mind you, like, you know, it's one of the most haunted places in, you know, Philadelphia, of course, and in the General Wayne Inn. Then, of course, what's wild is not only does Philadelphia have, you know, those two buildings, but there's also Eastern State Penitentiary. There's Fort Mifflin.
Eastern State Penitentiary is right there. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's all like centralized in that one area. Mm-hmm. So one thing that I love is, of course, in May of 2021, I got a call from Leo Ashcraft, who, of course, I'm very familiar with him. Back in 2015, he worked for the late Art Bell, and he said, "Hey, you know, I created this news service for Art Bell in May 2021. You know, I no longer want it. I'm just trying to move off of it. Would you guys be interested in purchasing the news program that I had? I created a news service for Art on a show called Midnight in the Desert when he came back for the final time in 2015.
Of course, absolutely, yes.
And included the website, the logos for Dark Matter News, everything else that dealt with the name. So what we did was we purchased the rights to Dark Matter News, and then when instead of just burying it and letting it die, we decided we'll just merge it into Phantom Detectives, because we already have our own, you know, growing team. We went ahead and just merged it into Phantom Detectives. So we actually just kind of, it just became like a division once the merger was complete. So we decided, yes, we're going to go ahead and we tore down the old website. I kind of completely bulldozed it and just rebuilt it to a beautiful new website. You can still see now darkmatternews.com. So I keep the website like as alive for like paranormal news stories. If you have like,
funny because if you hear these old recordings of Art Bell back in the 90s, he was sending out his stuff, a newsletter. You know, this is, of course, prior to the internet coming in, you know, and people would pay basically to get that information in the newsletter.
And you know what's funny?
It morphed.
Here's something funny. Two of his boys live right near me and they're personal friends of mine.
Really?
One's actually named Vincent Pontius. Vincent, of course, is Art's oldest son. He lives in Philadelphia. And then, of course, his brother, Vincent's brother, Kevin Yanaga, he's a famous sushi chef in Philadelphia. So okay. Two of his boys live like pretty much an hour from me. What a coincidence that is.
Wow. You know what? You always think of Art Bell and Perump. It's like,
yes. And what's wild was his successor. When he came back for the final time, his protege was Heather Wade. Heather, of course, unfortunately, is no longer available. She lost her mind. But
I'm going to ask you that. I was following, because I've always been a fan of Art Bell. And then I remember Heather and, you know, George Norrie took, you know, the Coast to Coast, whatever, you know.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I followed some of Heather's stuff and all of a sudden just went bloop, and just disappeared. And I was like, what happened?
Yeah. Like she has, unfortunately.
I heard something that she couldn't get over Art's death is what I understood it to be.
Yeah. And I was like best friends with her psychic advisor, Lasha. Lasha and Heather her name's Lasha Senya. She lived in Vancouver, Canada. Lasha and Heather they were like best friends. They did everything, talked together. Of course, Lasha worked with me on another radio show, but Lasha had told me Heather unfortunately had a mental breakdown after Art died. She would, you know, supposedly be like on, like she would go on networks, and then of course, you know, networks would be ready for her to come on and start her stream. Then she wouldn't be on until like an hour later. And then she would be like just completely just all losing. I think a lot of after Art's death kind of completely just devastated her. So she just had a mental break.
What I heard was that it was even like a year. It was like, it wasn't like fresh. It was like even after time had passed.
Yeah.
She was still acting like it had just happened the day before. Is what I heard.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's a shame because she's very talented and all that, but she just has a lot of issues. So I pray someday she actually finds peace with herself and you know, gets her mental health in order. And for now, I wish her well. And I just pray for every day.
Let me ask you something. Do you have Midnight in the Desert, or is it just the Dark Matters news?
Just the Dark Matter news portion. So what happened was in 2020, so Keith Rowland, of course, actually Keith Rowland was Art's longtime business partner, longtime, owner. So Keith actually went ahead and sold the network to, my friend Tim Osmond. Tim Osmond, of course, hosts Infinite Plane Radio, who is a big Art Bell fan. And his partner, Tim Osmond, sold, and a guy named Mike Marshall. So there's supposed to be, when the sale of Dark Matter Digital Network went through in April 2020, Keith retired. So after Art died, of course, he had different hosts that hosted it after he let go of Heather. Of course, he brought in Dave Schrader. Of course, Dave did a fabulous job. He really did a great longtime friend of Dave's. And so basically, April 2020, a guy named David Rabini, who is one of Art's producers, was trying to finance. You know, he's going to make payments to this guy from Hoboken, New Jersey. So the guy, he's of course a flat Earth guy. His name's Mike Marshallek. Mike Marshallek bought the network for some undisclosed price from Keith. And of course, what was supposed to happen was for the Dark Matter Digital Network was Rubini, this guy David Rubini, was supposed to pay back this loan that he had from Mike Marshall. Like, I don't know the exact numbers, but supposedly there was, you know, he was supposed to make payments every month. And of course, Marshall, like, bought the company from Keith in sometime in 2020. And then what happened was, you know, then Rubini got, you know, had a, you know, him and Marshall, like, had a falling out. And then Marshall, like, seized the company. And of course, there was a court case, if you read about it, in May of 21, that supposedly, you know, there was a, some in a New Jersey courtroom about Art's final recordings, you know. So the there's that's still pending litigation. So I have no idea. But somehow there was a court case involved between, like, Marshall and Rubini that was still going on. So Marshall, like, owns the company. So I was trying to eventually talk about acquiring Dark Matter Digital Network. But unfortunately, I've not heard from him. So I was trying to work on, you know, getting, like, a deal done at some point in the future, because I would, I think it would be great if, you know, if the company was to eventually come back someday. But the problem is, you would have to get the current owner to, like, either sell it, or he would have to be involved in running it, you know. And of course, Tim Osmond did a pretty good job. You know, he actually did as long as he could, but of course, Marshall, like, didn't want to pay him anything. So Tim's like, I can't do this anymore. So he just decided to walk off Dark Matter back in late 2021. But I give him credit. He did his best. And hey, he did a commendable job for keeping the company going. So I'm glad at least I got a portion of the new service of network.
Yeah, let me tell you something. But yeah, when things get tied up in court proceedings, it's like, oh boy.
You know, oh yeah, like, definitely. And I think what happened when Keith retired, that's when kind of everything kind of headed south, because Keith retired and it just went.
I hate to say it, but yeah, sometimes there's always somebody behind the scenes who's the one that keeps everything, you know, going.
Exactly, you know? Like the glue that holds it together.
And, right, and then when that one person, you pluck them out of the process, that's it. Like you said, it goes south, and yeah,
exactly. Absolutely,
yeah, that's a shame. That's a shame, because let me tell you something. Even after what Art Bell died in 2018, what is it, going on 5 years?
6 years now.
6 years. I mean, it's like, even now, he's still a famous guy, as far as, especially in the paranormal world, for his, you know, for his interviews and stuff.
Oh, yeah. And not to mention, I was on with George Norrie in June. It was a lot of fun, and I got to talk about our investigation. So for me to, you know, go and sit down and talk to George was absolutely fabulous. Nicest guy in the world, and really down to earth. And one thing I love about George, at least I can say about him, is he doesn't, never misses a show. He took over for Art in 03 and still is there every night, you know, night in and night out. And that's a commendable effort, you know, for him to continue exactly what you know, he had started. And of course, you know, George has always been there from day one, and he's done a commendable job. And of course, I know Whitley Strieber and Art Bell were really good friends too. Whitley, of course, wrote the books Communion and Hunger and Wolf and And of course, Whitley and Art were like best friends as well. And I think they were only like Prince Born a month apart. And and it was pretty cool. It's Art's old announcer did some voiceovers for us in like 2022. Like, you know, I'll send that to you. So if you want to use that for our intro.
Let me tell you that some of my favorite interviews are the ones he did with Malachi Martin, Father Martin.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Those are the best, man. Those things were great. This was like pre Y2K. World's coming to an end, you know?
Absolutely. And those are pretty amazing, because I remember Malachi Martin was like a Jesuit priest. He actually like, you know, was he actually had all kinds of crazy stuff, like from like he's had like hundreds and hundreds of demonic cases, and he went over
And I've read his books. And let me tell you something. You read his books, which were based on real stories. He had, you know, they changed the names. Let me tell you something, his descriptors, you read some of that and it's like, holy crap. It was like very it did a number in your head, because he gave a lot of details that you don't normally hear, you know. But his interviews were fascinating.
They really were. And I always enjoyed them. And I'm so glad, because those old shows are always going to be out there. Like, you know, from the 90s and 2000s, like, you could still find, like, a bunch of his old shows, like, just by, like, Googling, like.
Yeah, that one, Hostage to the Devil, is the title on that one. But he wrote a bunch of fictional, like, thriller type stories. He was a very good writer.
Absolutely. I think he died sometime in the late 90s, according to my research.
Late 90s.
Yeah.
That's why I think that that's one of the reasons why they were talking about that Art Bell's interviews with him was like right those few years right before he died. And this was also when they were discussing the Secret of Fatima. And of course, like I tell everybody, people that are not, Y2K back then, before Y2K came and went and nothing happened, It was like the end of the world. Economies were going to collapse.
Yeah,
computers
especially the
couldn't
stock market.
Handle it.
Yeah,
you name it. You name it. They built up. They did a bunch of movies in Hollywood about everything. A meteor hitting us. What else? So yeah,
pretty wild stuff. And according to supposedly, they're supposed to be like computers were supposed to crash. The stock market was supposed to crash.
Everything was supposed to like economic meltdown, and then nothing
absolutely.
Happened. But
yeah,
when you listen to the a lot of their, and obviously they had no knowledge, of course, what was going to happen in 9/11. But back then, the big thing was the year 2000 was going to be the big
was supposed to go under, right?
Yeah, nothing happens. Like, yeah, that was it. That was it.
It was, it was more just like a superstition. Like, people just like say, oh, just like, for example, like Jesus Christ is supposed to return to earth on this day.
Oh no. It was like, I know that there was a couple of doomsday cults out there saying the same thing, like these people, the Haley Bop people, the UFO is going to come riding and let's go. And by the way, let's kill ourselves while we're at it, but yeah, you had a lot of, what they call those death cults, around the, as a matter of fact, not even the United States, in Europe, where they were prepping some type of like, let's all die and because the world's ending kind of deal. It's crazy.
Absolutely.
It sounds crazy, but yeah, you'd be surprised what people will believe. But yeah, the thing with Art Bell and sometimes I wish it's like, man, Art, did you die? Because he was really, and like every, I don't show everybody, his format of just unscreened phone calls. Some of them, I listened to them just to laugh at some of the calls he would get.
Yeah, like for example, one of my favorite ones that he did, supposedly, this was somewhere around 97, 98, according, there was supposedly that there was this caller that called in one night on open line saying that they were above Area 51 or something. And then, of course, months later, it turned out to be just a fabricated call. But that's what Art did. He gave everyone a theater of the mind.
Oh, that guy, Mel's Hole. Is it Washington, Mel's Hole?
Yeah.
Some of that stuff, some people you would listen to and you go, boy, that person's crazy. And other people, they sounded very sane. And they were just saying, wait, time travelers. And it was like, it was great. And some of them, by the way, had excellent, excellent ghost stories.
They really did. Like they would call in like from all over the world, from Hawaii to Canada to England to Italy. I mean, he had a worldwide audience. And I think at his peak, somewhere in the 90s, he was on like 500 radio stations that had like 15 to 20 million listeners, something like a million a night on about the same time. And I think Art and Ramona really created Coast to Coast a love for their listeners, a love for radio, and a largest for blowing people out of the water.
There was a lot of night owls, people out there, and west of the Rockies, east of the Rockies, whatever,
absolutely.
And you hear his really early stuff.
Absolutely. And Ross Mitchell, of course, really kind of created that, like, that element for his announcer, really kind of brought that, like, element to his shows.
Like I said, that unexpected, you never knew what you were going to get because he wasn't screening his calls. It was just him. And he was like, all right. And, every once in a while, I know he had to cut off people if they were like, they used like inappropriate language, but most of the time he let people run with it. It's like, okay, all right.
Yes, he did. And one of his favorite rules was no bad language, one call per show.
And he had his people, he had the people that were like the hey, so-and-so, oh, so-and-so, somebody that would call that they became known. But yeah, that format, I think that that was really interesting. That did a lot as far as the paranormal.
Everybody out there.
Had their moments.
To me, like, who really, he was kind of the first to talk about things like UFOs and with John Lear, and then Linda Moulton Howe doing her reports from Dreamland back in the 90s with Art. He was pretty much the first host to really pioneer paranormal radio. Like, there was nobody unlike him because he started, he was just so bored doing like political talk radio. Early version of Coast to Coast AM, he used to call West Coast AM. He found it in the late 70s or late 80s. And then he got kind of bored of that. And sometime in the early 90s, he started I think that's where his listener base exploded because he started doing like the paranormal. And I think that's when his numbers just went way up because I wanted to
hear these stories, these wacky stories, whether you believe it or not. And then there was other people that they would say, you could tell. These were normal, everyday people. And they had this one incident, and they would say, this happened to me, And I could never explain. You could tell by the way we were talking, this was an insane person that could just never explain what that paranormal event was.
Exactly. And what was wild was, like, he just had a way of being able to let people tell their stories. And it was just, it was so revolutionary. And I believe he actually has the Guinness Book of World Record holder for endurance broadcasting. I think one night is what his son Vincent told me. Said, because, of course, Vincent was his son back in the 60s. But he had told me that somehow, like, one night in Okinawa, that supposedly he went, like, I think, 50, like, you know, like, literally 120 consecutive hours, like, just broadcasting nonstop. He's in the Guinness Book of World Record holder for endurance broadcasting, like, for being able to do it.
Wow, that's a long time.
Something like that. Yeah, somewhere in the neighborhood of 100 plus hours. So that's pretty wild for him to be able to get.
No, he was, and he was like, and no, I would, just the stories, like I said, the format was, that's the spontaneity. How's that? The spontaneity. Yes. And I'm gonna throw this in at the, I know that, I think that compared to a lot of the paranormal shows that sometimes have become a little bit too formulaic, I want to say that this was a little bit better. The closest that's come is, you know, some of the shows where they'll interview the original people and then they'll have actors do the storyline. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But they're interviewing the original. And I think there's something about when you see everyday people, you know, talking about their experiences, that's very captivating. I think that was one of the most interesting things that Art Bell had about his format. And then he just, I said, he let them run. He just, like, whatever they were going to say.
And one thing I love too is not only that, but also he just did one guest a show. He didn't when Dave Schrader and different hosts took over Midnight the Desert, they would have like three or four guests in a show. But Art's formula was just one guest for 4 or 5 hours. And they would just see, I think that was Art's way of drawing out their stories, being able to get more and more information out of them. And try to let them kind of tell their story in a way that would present.
Yeah, they would go to the. They would discuss things that. The conversation would evolve into these areas where all of a sudden they were talking about, you know, firsthand experiences, stuff maybe that wasn't included in that book that they wrote, you know, which is really what people want, that behind the scenes look, or their own personal experiences. Yeah, of course, that's very interesting. And let's face it, if you were an investigator, an author, or whatever, you wanted to be on Art Bell's show, because if you were interviewed by Art Bell, your name is going to be known.
Oh, absolutely. And not to mention like once you get on, like, you know, getting on that radio show, it's like syndicating like 600 plus stations all over the world. You're going to be known by, like, you're going to get all kinds of offers from, like, listeners that, you know, might have like an opportunity for a location for you to investigate, or a place where, or a UFO case, or they might need you to come on, like, in, you know, for some magazine or publication. So getting on, like, coast to coast is a huge honor for every person, because even today with George Norrie, it still, like, continues the tradition. So getting on there is like, it brings you clout and notoriety. You know?
Oh, yes. If you're saying, I was on coast to coast, absolutely. It does. It does. Because the origins was, you know, what Art Bell did. And what's really funny is, and I think it's like, nobody thought that so many people would listen to the radio during the wee hours. You know, usually you think of that time as dead time.
People would be asleep, but that's when, like, I think a lot of it, because not to mention different time zones all over the world. So for some different time zones, it would, like, a 1 o'clock a.m. or, you know, 9 o'clock p.m. West Coast time might be like 8 o'clock or 9 o'clock a.m. in different parts of the world. So, you know, he by having all these different time zones covered, he would be able to go into, like, listeners from all over, from Japan to China to Guam to the Philippines. Yes. You know, so he would be able to cover all over the world. And so what happened was he sold a KNY station to Karen Jackson, his neighbor, sometime around 2010. And so, you know, he moved off. He actually founded Radio in Pahrump, basically, you know. And even if you drive by his property today, his property's on Desert Lane in Pahrump, you can still see the radio towers, like, all over the property.
right. And he was literally in the middle of nowhere when he started. It was like, that's way out there in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah. And not to mention, he was a certified radio operator when he was 13. Yeah. Vincent told me that his boy told me, I think sometime around 13 or 14, he got his ham license. So it's pretty amazing he was able to, you know, roll with that.
Yeah. That's one of those things, you know, what is it, your first love kind of deal?
Yeah.
And he kept on it. And there you go. and the rest is history.
Yes, it is. But
yeah, and he was absolutely, like I said, I still enjoy listening to him, you know, but they've released some of his shows from the vault.
Yeah.
Like, so I really enjoy that stuff. And
too.
Some of his earlier stuff, and, you know, people like, and this was, I remember when, obviously when he first got his website up, that he would post pictures and he would tell people, go over there, look at this picture, and and things like that. And
really
of course, my absolute best are Ghost to Ghost, Halloween. That's the best.
Yeah. One thing I loved about what he did with Ghost to Ghost was he gave people a platform to send over ghost stories live. And what he did was he would actually, of course, he did a second version on Dark Matter. He called it, I can't remember if it was called Dead. Oh, I don't remember what the name of it is. But what he did was he actually read live ghost stories over the radio. And then, like, he had people listeners submit. Oh, Dead Air. It was called, his second version of Ghost to Ghost was called Dead Air on Dark Matter. So what he did, he let people, and of course, Heather did her version called The Hauntings of Nye. So basically, he would have submit ghost stories live over the air, and he would read them. And what's great is Nori today still continues the Ghost to Ghost tradition. So reading the ghost stories were always a lot of fun. Where, you know, same people would submit them from different, like saying, "Hey, I saw a ghost. I was walking up the stairs one night. I started catching this presence." So he'd read all those stuff over the air. It was really neat.
Let me tell you something. I'm going to interject real quick. There was one story I've never forgotten. God knows, there's one story in this guy. He's telling him how this guy's an engineer for, I want to either say Caterpillar or this is an engineer.
Right.
And he says how he moves out to this town, Wisconsin, somewhere up in the Midwest. So he gets this, buys his house, he's moving in. And he says that he puts a dresser in what was supposed to be his daughter's bedroom.
Right.
And they're coming in and out, unloading. And he says, all of a sudden he goes back in there, puts something else, and he can't open the door.
Wow.
So he's thinking his son is pulling a trick on him. Because he's like, why can't I open this door?
Right.
The chest of drawers he had just put on there was up against the door.
Wow, that's amazing.
And all of a sudden he says his son, it sounded like a teenage son, comes in through the door. And he's looking at him like, okay, that wasn't you. And this guy says, like, he could, in other words, he says he couldn't figure out how that chest of drawers in an empty room
moved
up against the door and he couldn't open it. Finally, he shoved it open and he says, he tells his wife, and his wife told him, okay, but that's not going to be the daughter's room. Forget it. And he says he made it into a poker room. So he says a story that a few years later, eventually moves out because he's one of these guys, I guess, that moves around depending where the company puts him. So he says five or 6 years later, he's coming by and he sees the house is up for sale. So he's like, he just stops out of curiosity, or maybe a little bit more. Maybe, I don't know, 6, 7, 8, it was a few years afterwards. It's got an open house. Real estate agent is.
Yep.
And she's kind of telling him, please don't tell me that. He comes to find out this house had changed hands like maybe every 12 to 18 months.
Wow. So pretty much it had a revolving door owners, like one person would have it for a year.
And it was like a modern, when I say a modern house, it was like a regular, you know, residential neighborhood, like it wasn't an older home or anything. And I love that story because you really don't have any explanation as to how, why, or anything. But that obviously something was going on there. Yeah, it kept losing owners frequently.
Oh yeah, definitely. And what was wild was, like, if there goes, it kind of reminds you of like a lot like Amityville, and you know, basically summer, when people would have it for a couple of limited time and give it back to the owner, then it would cycle through owners and just have the same experiences over and over, unless they start cleansing these houses and, like, you know, doing sage and different things like that. These houses are going to continue with that ever revolving door.
Even though, you know what, that the Amityville, from what I understand, the family has said that nothing after the, you know, the DeFeo murders and the Lutzes and that whole debacle, unless they kept it very quiet. I've heard that they've lived there, that they haven't had any problem. I mean, I know they changed the numerical address of the house, you know.
They used to call it Ocean Avenue or something like that.
It's still an Ocean Avenue, but they changed the numbers portion of the house to something else.
Oh, whatever. That way kind of cheap.
And they've said, no, we've never had any of the experiences that the Lutzes.
Right.
As a matter of fact, Art Bell frequently brought on George Lutz.
Yeah, I believe he did.
That was really interesting interviews with George Lutz, as far as that he would talk about what his experiences were. It was really, but he had him on there a few times. They were really interesting. As a matter of fact, when you listen to those interviews with Art Bell and George Lutz, they offered a lot more, how can I say, about that Amityville. Like, you know, there's, you know, there's always been the thing whether they were, that basically faked it or not. But when you listen to George Lutz, he was, he didn't, sounded like a pretty honest about it, but then you never know.
And I think didn't Lorraine Warren and the Warrens actually did, actually, like, because I know the Warrens, I knew the Warrens' son-in-law, Tony Sperry, and I know John Zaffis, of course, who he was Ed Lorraine's nephew. I believe, didn't the Warrens investigate the Amityville? I think
yes, they did. They did. Yes, they did. And as a matter of fact, that's the, around the time that they were doing it, you know, that's when they caught that photograph of that little kid. You know, the stairs that they say that it looked, the child looked like one of the failed children boys that got killed.
Yeah, the failed boys, I think.
Right, that I think it was a reporter. It was one of those deals that a bunch of people had gone there and they caught it. Supposedly, when there was nobody in the house, like no children, how's that? Like, what's this little kid gonna be doing peeking? And that Ed and Lorraine Warren. Yeah, that's another one that. And then, you know, off it went. And again, you never know. Were the new owners saying, we can't talk about this because if we ever try to sell this house, we're never going to be able to?
Right.
Or was there really nothing happened?
A lot of the stories, I believe, were made up to give it, like, you know, more press and kind of, you know, kind of like a way to get more revenue for the place and, you know, to try to pretty much, like, you know, I believe some of the stories, yes, but I also believe a lot of these people having these, a lot of it was made for, like, tourism on the, like, just much like the, you know, to get more money, to get more, you know, people there and to try to get, like, some more visitors and different stuff like that. So a lot of tourism and stuff like that. So I think a lot of the stories, you know, from Amityville, the hauntings.
Butch DeFeo died, I think it was in 2021 or 2022.
Died. I think so. Ronald DeFeo actually murdered his whole family. That's, I think, according to the history.
And this is the thing. That house obviously had history. And it makes you think, unfortunately, that guy, he was doing a lot of drugs. You know, Butch DeFeo was doing a lot of, like, you know, I was like, really, like, you know, was it only strangely drugs? Obviously, it was, they had dysfunction in the house, or was there something else in that house already that pushed them over the edge? And, because, yeah, there was a lot of versions of that he eventually talked about as to why or how he did it. And God knows, that's a whole different thing. But yeah, the, as far as the Lutzes, I don't know. I've heard conflicting stories as to that. No, that they didn't buy the house with the intention of, you know, having what Jay Ansem write that book and, you know, become like a runaway bestseller, whatever.
Yeah, definitely. I think a lot of tourism and, like you say, the ghost stories to try to get an extra bang for the buck, they could say.
Well, I mean, you've even heard that it was like, you know, what's a mafia involved. I mean, yeah, I've heard of all the different, like, what ifs. The only thing, I'll tell you what, the only thing, and you tell me what you think, Joshua, the only thing I can never figure out is they had five people shot in there and no neighbors heard the shots.
No neighbor. And that's pretty... my opinion, like, what happened was they must, unless he did it, like, so stealthily and so quiet, like, he basically, you would think that a neighbor, like, would hear, like, basically live, like, pretty much like within 30 feet or 50 feet away would be able to hear those shots, but for basically no neighbors to hear that, he must have,
this,
like,
is the middle of the night. He killed them in the middle of the night when it's a residential area, which really quiet, you would think, really, especially in the middle of the night. And let's say you hear one shot and you could be like, was that a shot?
Exactly. You would think that, you would think it would alert, like, all the neighbors nearby and alert everyone in the town. Like, it would be like a chain reaction, like a domino effect, all these lights coming on and, like, all of a sudden, like, what the hell is going on there? You know,
or somebody at least coming out and saying, hey, I heard, you would think something's happening, something's, and that's the part of everything that I've never quite understood, how somebody could get shot, five shots go off in the middle of the night in a residential neighborhood. By the way, this is not high crime where everybody's like, hey, mind your own business. This is a little nice residential neighborhood. Nobody calls the police. Nobody comes out and says, hey, you know, like, what's going on? That's the only part I don't get.
Like, I never understood that. And I think a lot of it, like, you would think that there would be, like, you know, more and more, like, you would think that the cops would have been there, like, to get this guy, apprehend this guy. You would have think that there would have been, like, you know, more and more, like, you know, people aware, like, so maybe somehow neighbors going in to, like, maybe help the family out, you know, maybe, like, to apprehend this guy and try to take him down. It could have been a break-in. I mean, who knows, you know, what people were thinking. You would think that there would have been someone there, like a neighbor that maybe like, you know, trying to go in there and help the family, or like fire marshals or police or something, yeah. Some kind that would do something to help the people there, you know?
Right. I guess my question is, I'm not going to say that the neighbors are going to assume that the family is being killed.
Right.
They're thinking something's right. going on, you know, is somebody being held up? Is somebody something, you know, where people right. come so, outside so just to check out, like,
is it like a home invasion or is it like
home invasion,
something
going what's going on? You know, I don't know. That to me is really weird. And but yeah, that of all the mysteries there, that's the, which is, by the way, that did happen. It's not like the rest of the story, which is, you know, there's different versions of what happened. But yeah, anomalies like that around, you know, and we could put the paranormal slant on that. I have run across other cases of what they call family annihilators.
Okay? Right.
Where gunshots involved, and for some reason nobody hears gunfire as a neighbor.
Right. Yep. And
you're asking yourself, okay, is there, obviously the guy's, you know, doing his thing, but is there something else going on as far as in that moment of pure evil?
Right.
Where, you know, you're getting people killed that.
Right.
So yeah, I've read other cases and I've done other research on other cases like that where for some reason nobody, same thing, like, residential neighborhoods.
And think about like
gunfire.
Like,
well,
especially
one guy
for me, like,
in Ohio, he was the one that 4 p.m. that called the cops and said nobody had responded. He had killed everybody.
Right.
He had killed his mother, his brother's wife, and their 5 kids on Easter.
Right.
Inside the home. Nobody responds. He's the one around 4 or 5 p.m. because the family had gathered for like an Easter thing in Ohio.
Right.
Calls up and goes, he calls up. He's the one that calls the police and says, I just finished doing this.
Right.
Okay. And this is a house in a residential neighborhood. I can't remember the exact town in Ohio. This happened like, I want to say 77, something like that. Same thing. Nobody heard gunshots. So, yes, there's
right.
It's really weird when you do that investigation as far as,
oh yeah, you know, definitely. And
what is it? The dome of silence or something like that.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's pretty wild for that to happen. So you would think that overall, you know, for that to happen, it was pretty crazy. And you just don't know, like, especially it's going on in these houses, like what in that moment, basically, when that strike of fear going through your, you know, going through you, you know.
Oh, absolutely. Let me ask you something. Are you working on any book, on any project besides what you said or anything? As far as from our podcast listeners, what is the website that they can go to? Is it Phantom Detectives?
Sure. So what I'll do is I'll give you all of our websites. You
yes,
can just
go ahead.
Plug those in and sure.
Absolutely.
So the first website I would like to plug in is Mark Anthony, the psychic lawyer, psychic explorer.
Yes. Yes.
You can find him at afterlifefrequency.com. So it's all one word, afterlifefrequency.com. That's Mark's website. You can reach him directly. Mm-hmm. If you have a UFO case you want investigated, you want something done on the UFO end, if we want Rick to look into a case, his website is the ERC, so it's the number ERC, so that's ERC2explore.com. That's ERC2explore.com.
Okay.
So that's Rick's website for his own UFO research. He runs Extraterrestrial Research Center, so ERC2explore.com. To reach Melissa, I didn't get a chance to talk to Melissa, our psychic medium, but Melissa's website is all one word, psychicmediumautumn.com. So if you need a reading done, or you want, she's a protege, a student of Cindy Kaiser from the Holzer Files. She studied mediumship and advanced development. Her website, psychicmediumautumn.com. She also serves as our case manager for Phantom Detectives. To reach myself and my websites, which are the team website, you want to reach the team, and that is all one word, phantomdetectives.org. For the team website, phantomdetectives.org. And to reach, you know, also, if you want to reach me on Dark Matter News, all one word, darkmatternews.com.
Perfect. Yeah, because I'll put a link in the credits of the show, but for the podcast listeners, you know, sometimes they can't write stuff down. So that's why I ask my guests to just give out their website addresses. And on there, what, you post any of the events that you're doing or any of the things that you're working on?
Yep. You can also reach us on all the social media sites where we also have Phantom Detectives and Dark Matter News on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Flickr, Tumblr, YouTube, Google. I mean, on YouTube, we're basically always like uploading, like we'll do paranormal equipment reviews.
Okay.
We also have a really cool thing we're offering your listeners if they're interested. We
Yes.
actually, back in earlier this year, we recorded a bunch of instructional videos how to teach people on it. We have a subscription system that is now available. If you go to phantomdetectives.org, we have a Patreon page where you can see all of our investigation videos, all of the
Okay.
interviews that we've done throughout our history with the locations that we've been. You can
Okay.
also, all the Dark Matter News audio files or everything is on this Patreon page. That's patreon.com/phantomdetectives. Patreon.com/phantomdetectives. And we actually have
Okay.
your listeners, we can offer a subscriber where they can pay like 20 or $5, $10 a month and get like all of our videos and more and all of
All
our
your
best
archives and
storyboards.
everything? That's great. That's fantastic. And this is video archives, right?
All of our instructional videos, all of our investigations, all of that stuff is on that Patreon.
Oh man. Okay. Well, it's that when it says 2024 is going to be very busy for you.
Oh, definitely. We're looking forward to building this thing and getting it bigger because I can already see we're already starting to build a large following. We've been in magazines now. We've been on local television. We've already have been on numerous radio shows all over the world, like Coast to Coast, Talk is Jericho with
Yes.
Chris Jericho. So I
Yes.
think this thing's only going to get bigger as time goes on. The more that
Sure.
we keep practicing, the more that we keep working, I expect it to get even more and more traction. So I think because now we're looking at starts talking about we've already been in Delaware, we've already investigated in Pennsylvania. Now we're talking
Yes.
about expanding possibly into New Jersey and Maryland. So I think it's all going to get bigger as time goes on. So just the more you keep at it, the bigger it
Absolutely.
gets.
You know, that's the good thing is that you guys, where you're up there in the Northeast, you can go to all these states because you're all very close. It's all very close to each other, you know,
Right.
travel wise.
It's a great feeling because you just hop right down the road, you're in Delaware. Hop right down the road, you're in New Jersey. Hop right down the road, you're in Maryland.
This
It's a
is the
great, it's a
oldest parts of the
tri-state.
country. This is the stuff that's, you know, revolutionary times. You know, you've got a lot of stuff there that's really, really old, dating back to the 16 and 1700s. So
Oh
absolutely,
yeah.
yeah, you got plenty of places to go to.
Absolutely, there's always never ending client. And also, I want to give one more website out that
Sure.
people. A really neat directory. So in 2020, there was this guy named Bill Wilk. Bill actually, of course, created a website called paranormalsocieties.com.
I'm
It
a
was a directory where,
paranormalsocieties.com
yep,
for many
yep.
years, yes.
So basically, of course, what happened was so Bill created this website around 2007. And so basically, in June 2020, his last post was that he was looking for help. But fortunately, paranormalsocieties.com is now abandoned and no more. So what I did was I connected with one of Bill's friends named Josh Vandewetter, and Josh decided he built a new version of the website because since there's so many teams that were trying to ask to be put into the directory, so the website was like a 4,892 teams that he left it at, with like
Yes.
hundreds, dozens more teams to be approved for the directory. So Josh went ahead and programmed a new website. He bought the domain. So the new website is paranormalsocieties.org. To just switch out the .com with the .org. And what Josh did was not only did he expand the original Bill
Okay.
Wilk directory, but he made it better. He actually added in like locations where teams can submit locations. Because Bill was working on another website before he vanished called ParanormalHotspots.com, Paranormal
Okay.
Hotspots. So Josh went
So
ahead
let me
and
ask you what paranormalsocieties.com then got abandoned. It's just static. In other words, they haven't deleted, they haven't added. It's just whatever's there is there. That's a shame.
It's just an abandoned ghost town now. So the new website is paranormalsocieties.org. So that's the one
Okay.
where if teams, so basically if you register, you can also register your team. You can
Yeah,
set up
I'm
your
looking at it
service
right
areas.
now.
What you specialize on. So everything is on the new website. You can see the directory.
Yes.
Josh has done a great job of continuing Bill's legacy, but he's also doing it even he's expanding upon it and adding more features.
Yeah, that's great. Let me tell you something. Paranormal societies, believe it or not, originally for many years, like you said in 07, he was one of the first to come up with like a directory type of listing for groups, you know,
Oh,
especially
yeah.
if you wanted to find somebody that was local in your area. And the reason why
Right.
I say that is I would always have people calling me all the time, either looking for services or to join a group. And it was like, oh man, I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's
It was a
great.
great show. So at
Yes, it
least, like,
was.
I'm glad to see that. At least Bill, like, I don't know what happened to Bill. I think Bill passed away. I can't prove that. But I think that
Nobody's been
if,
able
like,
to
one
reach him,
thing.
huh?
nobody's been able to reach him. So I think what happened was he either like was stressed out and just walked away from it, or he passed away. My assumption is I think he probably passed away because, but the thing is that when Josh went to try to locate Bill and try to figure out like whatever happened to him, like he'd had noticed that the paranormalsocieties.com domain, there's a credit card that's been renewed every year. So somebody is renewing the website. It could be a family member. It could be just a card that he had, like, you know, that had like 6 or 7 years on it, the expiration date wise. But somehow every time Josh tries to make a claim for paranormalsocieties.com, it renews. So there's something going on there. Either he walked away or he just pretty much just he passed away, and no one's ever like found an obituary for him. So no one knows. But at least Josh is there to continue the legacy, and yes. I think he's done a fabulous job with the new website. So all your listeners that have teams, paranormalsocieties.org is a great way to do it. It's a great way to submit your information to the new directory.
Absolutely. Again, it has been great to speak to you, Joshua, and I want to wish you the best of luck on everything. And I'll keep tabs on you so you can come back and we can talk about what you're doing, you know, because you've got your finger in a lot of, you know,
different buckets.
Yes, absolutely. And I hope you do something with the dark matter. I really do. You know, Art Bell's legacy. Yeah.
Absolutely. And I hope someday I can eventually acquire the company. I'm not really too concerned because I got my own platform that's going to take off and get bigger over time. So if I get it, great. If not, at least I got the dark matter news and I'll just run with it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Awesome. I know what that's about. Yes. Good luck to you.
Thank you. You have a nice day.
You too. Bye-bye. Take care. All right, there you go. We talked about Art Bell, see? Yeah, you could tell I'm an Art Bell fan. And sometimes, you know, listening to his, you know how people progress, like, you know, like I said, pre-Y2K, when he had a newsletter and people had to call the 800 numbers, or if you're east of the Rockies, if you're west of the Rockies, if you're this, if you're that, first-time callers, you know, and then as he, you know, then he had the website and, you know, things like that. But yeah, and his format, I think, is fabulous because, and let me tell you something, he was very gutsy to take callers without screening them. Let me tell you, that could go wrong in a lot of ways. And, but overall, I think it was a really good format because I think people really like to hear stories from other ordinary people about things that had happened to them. Yeah, and you can tell the story. Sometimes it was like, this was a one-time thing that happened to them. This wasn't like, oh yeah, it was continuously. Yeah, you did have people that sounded like they were haunted. But overall, you also had a lot of people, when I'm talking about like the ghost to ghost and stuff like that, where people were talking about, man, I had this one situation that happened, and they would describe it. And then they just never got an explanation of why, or they had lived as a kid at this house and then they moved away. And some of them eventually researched and said, you know, I found this out, this happened in that house while we were living there. I love those stories. And then of course, you know, when he started interviewing people coast to coast and everything, like Joshua was saying, if you were interviewed by Art Bell on Coast to Coast, that was it. Just, you had lots of people listening to you. Lots of people. And of course, you know, whether it was ghosts or UFOs or time travel, or, you know, everybody's out there like, remember, these are also, the X-Files is a 90s thing. You know, everybody loved the X-Files because, you know, whether you believe it or not, or you think it's good entertainment, I consider it food for thought. So anyway, guys, I've got a bunch of great guests already, like I said, lined up for season 15 of Stories of the Supernatural. In 2024, I've got a great, great guest coming on. Like I said, go to MiamiGhostChronicles.com, mppelliser.com, eerie.news. You're going to find links to my Substack newsletter there. I've also got links there if you want to listen to any of the podcast versions of any of the shows without commercial interruption. You can find them on my website, and you can find me on all the major podcast platforms. You're going to find me there. Whatever it is, you're going to find me there. One of the best ones though to find me at is Spreaker, but again, you can find me on whether, and I even have links If you don't have one, whether you, let's say if you have an Android or an iOS system or an Apple, kind of, I've got links there that will take you over so you can look at the different apps that are available that'll work with your phone and that, that you could listen to the show on. But like I said, if you go to my website, you can listen to it without commercial interruption. So again, guys, Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. You'll be hearing from me again. But whether I know the show's a little bit staggered, but either way, I want to thank you for coming back every week and hanging out and listening to all these interesting people that we bring on. Till next time, take care.